Thank you. Okay, I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation. I must apologize. There are some mistakes in the slides. I was finishing them on the flight yesterday. Okay, so here is the title, and here is the problem. It's a very classical three-body problem, three masses. One is large, and two very small. Mu is a small parameter. So we get a very standard perturbation situation, unperturbed Hamiltonian, and small perturbation. Of course, H0 describes two uncoupled Kepler problems, so the motion is very simple. From the very beginning, I removed collisions of small bodies with a big body. So the space will be not the plane, but the plane without the origin. But on the other hand, collisions of the small bodies are represented by this delta. They will be important. So, but the configuration space formally will be this one. Okay, so then perturbed system, I denote it H0, describes two Kepler problems. It has first integrals. Okay, here is the first mistake. There are two energies and two angular momenta, of course. Okay. As everybody knows, if the Kepler... solutions of this system H0 with negative energies are just Kepler ellipses. When these ellipses do not intersect, H mu is a small perturbation of H0, and this is a very standard classical perturbation situation where there appear K and tori, Arnold diffusion, Neherashev estimates, all the complicated and interesting things. I consider the case the singular part S of this phase space where corresponding Kepler ellipses do intersect. So they move along ellipses with some frequencies. In general, these frequencies are rationally independent, so eventually they come very close to the collision. Then that perturbation will become large, so it's no longer a regular perturbation of the Hamiltonian H0. So the classical perturbation theory formally doesn't work. How to describe solutions. Of course, as almost everything in mathematical celestial mechanics, this problem was studied by Poincaré. He was interested in periodic solutions which have these near collisions, and he called them second species. Okay, actually it was in French, I don't know French. In the Russian translation of Poincaré book. Okay. I forgot that it's not Russian. Okay. So, second species solutions are solutions of this system H mu, which for small mu shadow chains of collision orbits of this Kepler problem. There is a long history. Actually, Poincaré, at least we think now that Poincaré didn't give a complete proof of the existence. Of course, with Poincaré, you need to be careful, but at least in any case, if the proof exists, it's too brief for us, well, modern guys to understand. Later, there was a lot of work, mostly for the restricted problem and mostly for the circular problem. Here there are several names. Actually, there are many more because this problem is important also for astronomers. And there was a lot of also astronomical work. I don't I know maybe 1% of this work. The first rigorous proof, mathematical proof of the existence of a periodic almost collision solutions was given for the circular problem by Jean-Pierre Marca and Niedermann. It is a paper of 1995. Well, later I had a work with McKay where we proved the existence of other types of periodic solutions, almost collision solutions, and also chaotic solutions. And later I also considered elliptic problem, which is in a way much richer than circular problem, and there one can prove existence of a lot of periodic, chaotic, diffusion, and so on and so on. Well, I already gave a few talks about that. The goal of the talk today is more or less to do more or less the same for the non-restricted problem. I already announced maybe some part of this before, but it was never written. Now at last it's submitted. I don't know. Okay. So now let's go to more mathematical part. So if we have a trajectory in the configuration space of this three-body problem, which approaches as parameter mu becomes zero to some curve, then this curve will be called a collision chain. And such curves must have some special properties. Okay, so when there exists a sequence of times such that away from these times, of course, we just get a trajectory of the unperturbed system, so two Kepler orbits. At times Ti, our small bodies collide, so position of one is equals to position of the other. This means that we are on this delta singular set. So that's something trivial. A little less trivial is that necessarily the total momentum along this curve must be continuous. The break of the total momentum is zero. Notice that P1 and P2, the momenta of our bodies, are not continuous. And of course also the total energy is continuous. Okay, energy is an integral of motion, so then it will be constant along this trajectory. This total momentum y will not be constant, of course. It's not an integral. So a picture which I am able to draw is something like this. Here is our configuration space, Q1, Q2. Here is this diagonal delta. So our collision chain is something like this. It has elastic reflection from delta. Elastic reflection means that the total momentum and that the component of the momentum in the direction of delta is preserved. So it's like a billiard. But a little difference with a billiard is that this delta has codimension 2 in the configuration space. So only very few trajectories pass through delta. So that's the collision chain. Only such chains can be shadowed by solutions of our three-body problem. Actually, these conditions can have a very evident simple variational characterization. L0 is the Lagrangian of the unperturbed system, just Lagrangians of two uncoupled Kepler problem. Let's consider this functional. Okay, I don't specify the interval. On the set of piecewise smooth curves, gamma, like here, which come to the diagonal delta, go away, come back at some times ti at position xi. If we take a variation of this functional according to the classical rules, we will see that each link will be a solution of our Hamiltonian system H0, of course, but also we have additional conditions, because this Ti and Xi are not fixed, they're independent variables. So if we vary them, we get something like this, and so we get that the break of the energy, delta H0 is the break of the total energy, and the break of the total momentum is zero. So collision chain is precisely the a critical point of this action function. It's important. Okay, now I want to impose additional condition, which has no variational characterization, and this is one of the difficulties in this subject. So our collision chain actually is a pair of curves, gamma 1, gamma 2, where gamma 1 and gamma 2 actually are just solutions or break solutions, better to say, of the Kepler problem. So let's introduce the relative velocity of our small bodies. These conditions about break of energy and momentum implies that the norm of this absolute velocity, of this relative velocity, is continuous. It doesn't change at collision. Direction is changed. And the additional assumption is that these two vectors are not the same and not the opposite. So here this curve shouldn't cross delta without changing its direction at all. Actually, only solution condition with a plus is really important. The minus is actually admissible. Then solutions which I will get will be nice solutions of the regularized system. Just I'm not able to show that they will not pass through the collision. If condition with a plus fails, then I'm not able to do anything at all. Note, by the way, in many works in this subject, this condition is absent. The shading solutions which I will study will come very close to collision, of mu close. In a lot of work done by astronomers, some of them I mentioned before, solutions come close to collision, but not too close, a little further. And for such solutions, actually the changing direction condition will be violated. In the limit, the direction is the same. And for such, in this case, I can do nothing. Just my method do not work. So, of course, what I do doesn't cover everything which can be done about the second species solutions. Okay, now here is a first theorem. Actually, it's a simple version of what is later on. It's about periodic solutions. So let us take a periodic collision chain with given energy. So this chain comes back after several, say, n steps. I wanted it non-degenerate. Means non-degenerate as a critical point of the action function, which was written somewhere. I will explain more precisely what does it mean later on. Of course, non-degenerate means modal rotation, because, again, I forgot to say in the very beginning that the integral of momentum is reduced. I put the center of mass at rest, for example, but the integral of angular momentum, I haven't done anything with that. So there is still rotational symmetry. So when I say non-degenerate, means non-degenerate modular rotational symmetry. So suppose we have this periodic collision chain, which is non-degenerate modular rotation. Then for small mu, it is shadowed by a periodic orbit of our three-body problem with the same energy. That's the theory. Actually, it's a simple theorem, and the proof is also not too hard. What to do? Standard thing, which was also done in this work of Mark and Niedermann for the circular problem, and okay, it's a classical Levi-Civita regularization. Let us do the following map J. It's a symplectic map. Instead of all variables Q1, Q2, P1, P2, we introduce new variables X, Y, Xi, eta. We think of Xi eta as complex number, so Xi square means a square. And Xi bar means complex conjugate. If we make the substitution in honor of Hamiltonian and multiply it by Xi square, we get this new Hamiltonian, which we see does not have singularity when Xi equals zero. Xi equals zero means Q1 equals Q2. So collision means Xi equals zero. Our original Hamiltonian had a singularity, this Hamiltonian doesn't have it. Of course, there is some singularity here, but this corresponds to the collision of small bodies with a big one, and from the very beginning I decided that I'm not able to deal with this case. Okay, this will be some triple collision problem, I mean, something much more difficult. So, of course, when we multiply the Hamiltonian by Xi squared, this means that we change time parameterization, so time is different. But in the end, we got a nice, smooth Hamiltonian, and J takes orbits of system with this Hamiltonian lying on the energy level epsilon. See here. Yes, I denoted this by epsilon. To orbits of our original system on the energy level. So in a way, here energy was E, here the role of energy is played by this epsilon, which is actually the ratio of masses. Okay, collisions correspond to, okay, I forgot to say, collisions correspond to Xi equals zero, eta equals zero, and you immediately see that Xi equals zero, eta equals zero is a critical manifold for this Hamiltonian. Collision chains, these things, will be replaced by chains of homoclinic, better to say heteroclinic, maybe, orbits to this critical manifold. And this critical manifold is in fact symplectic, because there are two symplectic variables, X and Y, on it, and normally hyperbolic, mean, in fact, the eigenvalues will be real positive. Okay, sorry, I forgot to say that not all this M will be normally hyperbolic. We want, okay, a part of this M. Okay, I don't want to do computations now, there is no time, but only part of this manifold will be actually normally hyperbolic, and M should be this part. That's another mistake. Okay. So we arrive at some very general setting which was discussed a lot, maybe in a different situation in Hamiltonian systems in the last, say, 50 years. We have a nice smooth Hamiltonian, and we have a normally hyperbolic, symplectic, critical manifold. Actually, this is a general result now. It doesn't matter that our Hamiltonian system with Hamiltonian H came from celestial mechanics. Just a normally hyperbolic, critical, symplectic manifold. What is important, I assume that eigenvalues of any point Z in M are real. They could be also complex. They could be like saddle focus. I won't saddle. That's because, okay, I don't want to go to the previous slide. Here, this eigenvalue was in fact real. If this is true, then for any orbit heteroclinic to this M, heteroclinic to M means that this orbit sigma is heteroclinic to some different points in M at plus infinity and minus infinity. There exists limit direction of our of our orbit. If we have a set of focus, then solution behaves like a spiral and there is no limit direction of the velocity, right? If the eigenvalues are real, solution come having some direction. And this V plus minus denotes this direction. Well, this bracket means, I don't know, like, okay, say we divide by the norm of this velocity sigma dot. Okay. Now we get this very well studied in the theory of Arnold diffusion situation, but much simpler really. So let's introduce the following thing, scattering map. It was introduced in the work of Deschamps, Delalade, and Ciara, and it was defined as follows. Suppose there are 2 points z plus minus such that there exists a heteroclinic going from one to another. Then we say f of z minus equal z plus. Of course, this is not a well-defined map. It will be at best not everywhere defined, multi-valued, not everywhere smooth, and so on and so on. But if we impose some transversality assumption, then this map will have at least some smooth branches fk. So when I, in the future, when I say scattering map, and this is more or less standard, I will think of F as a collection of the smooth, well-defined maps. And also these maps are symplectic. It's a well-known fact. So an orbit of this multi-valued map F is a pair. We have a sequence of these indices kj, a sequence of points, and each next is obtained by applying the corresponding branch fk of our map. So let kz be an orbit of the scattering map. Of course, it gives us a chain of heteroclinic orbits. I want additional assumption on this chain, that this thing should be positive for all j or negative for all j. The thing omega is symplectic form, and depending on how you define symplectic form, sometimes you write dx dy, sometimes dy dx, this plus or minus will change. So, but since I don't define what is omega, this is definitely right. Okay. So I don't want homoclinic chains of heteroclinic orbits where for some j this is positive, for some j, this is negative. Okay, now a theorem. Suppose we have a hyperbolic orbit of this F. By hyperbolic, I mean an orbit with positive Lyapunov exponents. Or if it is periodic, a non-degenerate periodic orbit. So here there are 2 cases, periodic and non-periodic. For periodic, just ordinary non-degeneracy. For non-periodic, something about Lyapunov exponents. And suppose the corresponding homoclinic chain is positive or negative. Then for small epsilon, there is an orbit of our Hamiltonian system on the level plus epsilon or minus epsilon, depending on this, which shadows the chain with error square root of epsilon. Okay, I don't prove the theorem. Actually, it's not hard. In fact, this theorem is reminiscent to an old a result of Turaev and Shilnikov, something in the 70s, when instead of a manifold of critical points, there was just one critical point. Here, well, I mean, I'm not sure what terminology is right. When I say an orbit starts at a manifold and comes to the manifold, I call it an orbit homoclinic to a manifold. But when I think of individual points, it goes from one point of this manifold to another point. Then I say heteroclinic orbit. But sometimes, being a little sleepy, I mix them up. So it's not difficult theorem. One can see immediately that something like this should be. imagine a maximum point of the potential energy. If the energy is positive, when we can come from one side of this hill to the other side, going above the maximum. When energy is negative, we shoot toward the maximum, and our orbit cannot cross the maximum. It comes back. So depending of what energy we take, positive or negative, we have to schedule different types of heteroclinic chains. Okay, so of course this theorem nicely applies to our case. Distance square root of epsilon will transform to distance of order mu, because remember our Levi-Civita map involved a square. Okay, for this system, now let's go back from the general result for any Hamiltonian system to this concrete situation. I will call this F not a scattering map, but the collision map, because it has very simple meaning. We have one point x minus, another point x plus, just in the plane. We take Kepler orbit of mass m1, Kepler orbit of mass m2. Suppose they collide at x minus and then again at x plus. Then every branch of our collision map will take x minus y minus to x plus y plus. Oh yes, what is y? Y is total momentum at collision time. So momentum of m1 plus momentum of m2. In general, this scattering map is a symplectic map, but here, in fact, it will be also a twist map with a generating function, LKE, depending on x minus and x plus. So the map will be given by this classical formula. I prefer a different terminology, which is also standard. Let's consider this collection of discrete Lagrangians. I call this calligraphic Lagrangian. And let's think of this as a discrete Lagrangian system. Trajectories of the discrete Lagrangian system are just critical points of this discrete action function. So it's a very standard situation, like, for example, in the theory of Mather, of twist maps. The only difference is that this index k changes. Here is one result which is a little bit more precise than my previous version. Suppose we have a collision chain with energy E and given angular momentum J. J is angular momentum, it is constant along any solution of our Hamiltonian system along any collision chain too. To this collision chain, there corresponds an orbit of this discrete Lagrangian system. If this orbit has positive Lyapunov exponents, then, well, of course, one pair will be always zero because of the conservation of angular momentum, I mean the other. Then for small mu, there exists an orbit of our three-body problem with given energy and given angular momentum, which shadows this chain gamma. Shadows, again, modular rotation. After many revolutions, the angle can change, so we shadow in the rotating coordinate frame. By the way, I forgot to say that all my shadowing orbits will have two big Lyapunov exponents of order log mu. There is strong instability, of course, for all my orbits. None of them will be Lyapunov stable. They will be all very unstable. Okay, it's evident when two bodies almost collide, it's very unstable situation. Okay, so all this is just general words. So we reduced finding this second special solutions to finding non-degenerate, in some sense, trajectories of a discrete Lagrangian system. Now, what is this discrete Lagrangian system? Unless we are able to study the system, we get nothing. It turns out, okay, not turns out, it's evident that, or almost evident that the discrete Lagrangian can be computed in terms of the classical Lambert's problem. What is Lambert's problem? We have two points in the plane, and we want to connect these two points by a Kepler orbit with given energy or given time. There are two different versions. The version with given energy is, of course, simpler. So let's use that. So I denote by f of 2 of x minus and x plus the Maupertuis action of a simple Kepler arc with major same axis 1. So energy, what, minus 1/2, joining these two points. I call this Lambert action function. Because of Kepler problem is homogeneous, major same axis 1 means we have done this for any major same axis, right? And then let us take any energy and consider connecting orbits with arbitrary number of full revolutions. So we join two points with a Kepler arc, which makes n revolution, full revolutions, and then comes from x minus to x plus. Then the Maupertuis action of such an orbit will consist of two parts. One is almost this one, just as there is a scaling by energy. And there is another part which shows how many times we made full revolution about an ellipse. So this is the Maupertuis section of a Kepler orbit. Now our collision orbit is a pair of Kepler orbits. So we just need to take a sum of these two. But energies, of course, should be different. So the formula for this discrete Lagrangian, actually it's very easy to guess, will be this one. So alpha 1 and alpha 2, remember there was this ratio of masses. M1 was alpha 1 mu, M2 was alpha 2 mu. We minimize over all E1, E2. There are some convexity here, so the minimum, if it attained, will be smooth. So it's a nice smooth function with some domain. I don't have time now to describe the domain. And this function, as I already mentioned, satisfies the twist condition, so defines our discrete Lagrangian system. So what do we have? These functions are completely elementary functions. One can find a formula for this function, or maybe even better for this function, in many books on celestial mechanics. There are some inverse trigonometric functions, but nothing more complicated. So the transcendental part here is to take this minimum. It's more or less like Legendre transform, which can spoil our function considerably. But when this n, or better to say k1, k2, k1 and k2 are the number of revolutions of these two arcs, are large, actually this minimum will have nice expansion in terms of k1 and k2. So it will be, again, almost an elementary function when k1 and k2 are large. Okay. So just to summarize, we got a discrete Lagrangian system with almost explicit discrete Lagrangian. So, for example, if we want to find periodic second special solutions, we look at this function of n variables x1, xn, look for non-degenerate critical points, and they will give us non-degenerate second specious, and they will give us second specious periodic solutions. Similarly, if we fix both energy and angular momentum, we need to consider such a... Oh. this is not this, this is this. Tau was time, I got rid of time by passing from Hamilton's principle to my Perturis principle, but forgot to make correction. So this is this one minus J phi. Phi is a phase. So now the last point is not like the first point, but it's the first point rotated by some angle phi. So if we look for critical points of this functional, this will give us quasi-periodic second species solutions. Quasi-periodic means periodic in a rotation coordinate frame and having given energy and angular momentum. Yeah. There is another approach, instead of this functional, corrected version of this functional, one can do another very classical thing, also going back to 19th century. In classical mechanics, there is a thing called Rouse reduction. Everybody knows how to reduce symmetry in a Hamiltonian system. To reduce symmetry in a Lagrangian system is a little bit more clumsy, but it's done in old-fashioned books called Rouse reduction. So here we have a discrete Lagrangian system, but this Lagrangian is invariant under the rotation. So J is the first integral of the corresponding twist map. So if we fix the value of this J and define the reduced Hamiltonian by this standard formula, it's more or less Legendre transform, right? We get new discrete Lagrangian, which depends now just on two real numbers. So we get a discrete Lagrangian system with 1 degree of freedom, simplest possible discrete Lagrangian system. So if we are able to get a hyperbolic orbit, an orbit with positive Lyapunov exponents for this discrete Lagrangian system, for the corresponding three-body problem, we get a chaotic, almost collision solution with given energy and angular momentum. Okay, so all these are just words. Now I want to give an example where this can be really accomplished. Being very lazy, I have written and submitted only one case based on an old work. It's too hard now to do new computations. As I mentioned at the very beginning, I have done some work for the restricted elliptic problem. Well, the relation between full problem and restricted problem is sometimes a little bit subtle. So it's not very straightforward to apply this my old results, but you can do it. So suppose that we have these two small masses, M1, M2. Suppose that one of them is much smaller than the other. And first, let's put this alpha 1 to be 0, meaning one of our masses is just absent. Then our functional, of course, remember this was discrete action functional, which gives a collision chains with given energy and angular momentum, and then shedding orbits with given energy and angular momentum. In this case, this functional becomes very, very degenerate, because Kepler problem is very degenerate. We know that for negative energy, solutions of the Kepler problem are all periodic with the same period. This means that this functional will have a critical manifold given by this formula. Let's take some ellipse gamma with given energy and angular momentum. It's defined modular rotation, of course. Let's take a sequence Ti such that the difference between them equals m times the period of motion along this ellipse gamma. And let's take points xi like this. So these formulas give us an n-dimensional non-degenerate critical manifold of this function. That's when alpha 1 equals 0. Now, when alpha 1 is not equal to 0, and we restrict our functional to this critical manifold n up to some constant, we get a function of t1, tn of all this, of these time moments only. And actually, this is a function which appeared when I was studying elliptic restricted three-body problem. Then one of the masses, say M2, was given, was moving along a given ellipse, so its motion was given, and the mass M1 was given under the attraction of the big mass M3 somewhere here, and this mass M2 was, which was giving, moving along an ellipse. So for this function, I then proved the existence of a lot of non-degenerate critical points. This applies here using the standard results about perturbation of non-degenerate critical manifold of a function. So this gives a lot of periodic orbits of the second species for this non-restricted three-body problem, but when alpha 1 is much less than alpha 2. Also in this case, one can get chaotic solutions. All this is based on the approach of my old paper of 2006, where in fact the corresponding collision maps were very close to integrable maps of a cylinder. Perturbation of an integrable map of a cylinder, I recall, it's a very hard subject from the point of view of chaos, because chaos, if it exists, is exponentially small. But that's not true when we have different maps. When we start composing different integrable maps, one map solution moves along one KM curve, for another map along another KM curve. This generically, these KM curves are different, they intersect transversely, and we get chaos even if the maps are really integrable, not nearly integrable. So that's not a hard thing to do. Okay, so this is just one example. What next? All this has one bad thing. I was always fixing angular momentum and energy. And then I was getting, for example, periodic orbits in a rotating coordinate frame. In this way, it's very hard to get real periodic orbits. So, well, it's standard situation. So in order to get real periodic orbits, one should do something different. One shouldn't fix the angular momentum. So let's fix only energy, E, but instead let us look for reversible periodic orbits. So we have two reversibility here. One is time reversibility, and another, okay, bar here is complex conjugate, reflection with respect to horizontal axis. Composition of these two gives us an anti-symplectic involution, as people say. And our system is reversible with respect to this involution. So if we look for this symmetry, we notice that our discrete Lagrangian system is also reversible if we conjugate these points x plus and x minus and interchange them too. We want to interchange them. Past and future are different. The Lagrangian is preserved. So if we want to find a symmetric periodic orbit, better to say reversible periodic orbit, we need to find critical points of this symmetric action function. So more or less, if an orbit is symmetric, we have n collision points, we just need to look at n over 2 of, at a half of them, because the other half will be determined. So half of the number of collision points is m here. So if any time we get a non-degenerate critical points of this function, we'll get a symmetric almost collision periodic orbit. Here we lost rotational symmetry. We lost it because we fixed reflection over the horizontal axis. So before there was this degeneracy all the time. All our functionals were rotationally invariant. Now, not. This functional is not rotationally invariant, so it does have a really non-degenerate critical points. We don't have to say this apologies non-degenerate modular rotation. And any periodic orbits that we will get will be periodic in a fixed coordinate frame. Well, there is a very simple situation when there are two collision periodic orbits. So we have just two points, x and x bar, symmetric with respect to horizontal axis. We have collision at x and collision at symmetric point. Then this function, which I did write on the previous slide, becomes a function of just a point in a plane. So any critical point of this function will give us a non-degenerate critical point, will give us a symmetric, reversible periodic orbit. And it is periodic in a fixed coordinate frame. Actually, these are the type of periodic orbits which were obtained in the work of Marco and Niedermann, but that was for the circular restricted three-body problem. And also, this type of periodic orbits were considered by Poincaré. Frankly, this function is elementary up to some small order terms. So finding its critical points and classifying it should be a doable thing. But frankly, I haven't done that. Well, hopefully someday. So that's all.